Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and joining me this week, as always, is Steve.
John, happy 2020. Happy new presidency.
Happy 2021 to you.
Oh my God, 2021 indeed. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah,
Boy,
it's
for someone that's ahead of the game so much, it's weird to see you behind the times.
I'm just a bit behind, yes.
And we're lucky to have Sean with us.
Hey John, happy New Year.
Happy, I think we're done with the New Year.
February is the cutoff. I think the general
Every week,
consensus
though?
is every week until February.
All
Happy
right.
New Year every day.
Let's not record till February 1st then, for the next time. All right. It is a new year and the news just keeps rolling in. Some good news for a change and some not so great news as well. Some challenges, I should say, opportunities for improvement. But one interesting thing that I saw in the world of fintech related to what's happening lately, a fintech just dropped the MyPillow guy from their services.
I don't Stripe, I'm guessing. Is it a payments thing? How is MyPillow a fintech customer? Anyway, go ahead.
Well, everybody's a fintech customer, Steve. That's a trick question, though, I guess. No, actually, Affirm has dropped the MyPillow guy for actually trying to, I don't know exactly, trying to start a revolution, trying to start a civil war. Take your pick. You know what? I don't even know the guy's real name. I'd have to scan to hear through it. I think we all know who you're talking about when you say the MyPillow guy.
It's the guy with the mustache, that guy.
That is that. If I say the guy with the mustache, people usually say the MyPillow guy. But that didn't go down well with Affirm, and generally failed coups tend to not fare very well anyway.
Yeah. So, my understanding from Affirm's business model is that they typically, service companies like Peloton, right, which helps you purchase a larger item, a higher ticket item, like say a Peloton bike. Isn't a MyPillow fairly inexpensive? Why would you need a firm
I
to
have
buy, say,
no
like?
idea. I've never gone to the website, or I'm not a customer. I'm ashamed to say. Let's talk about some new capabilities that fintechs are allowing people to do. Like, I don't know, manage all the world's currencies in one app.
In one app and also one card. This is actually, I'm super psyched about this. It's a company called Bitpanda. Great name, by the way. Bitpanda is an amazing name for a
Love the
crypto
name.
startup. Yeah, it's an awesome name. So what they do is that they issue you a debit card that's linked to your fiat currency, cryptocurrency, and precious metals. So imagine you are somewhere, I don't know, you're in Barcelona or in Kuala Lumpur, and you can pay via Bitcoin or dollar or euro or even in gold. And you can authorize payments and get an instant alert when you do so on the mobile app. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, awesome. So do you have to, like, for you're saying precious metals, do you buy it through them or you have to connect your accounts all into this one Bitpanda service?
I don't think you actually buy through them. I think you connect your account to it. And I should mention this also, it'll be an actual Visa branded card. So it'll be accepted everywhere you want to be. But yeah, just the idea is that you can transact in multiple currencies and manage also which pool of money you draw from for each transaction via the app. And it's interesting because this is coming out of a company in Austria. I haven't really seen a lot of Austria-based fintech players or fintech companies, but this seems like a pretty nifty product.
That's very cool, Steve. What would the process be like? Do you know, let's say I'm sitting in a cafe in Italy or something. This is hopes and dreams post Corona, but sitting in a cafe in Italy, I want my favorite espresso. I pay with the with the with this service, and then I choose which currency or which type of payment mechanism I would use. Is that how it would work?
Yeah, I think it's basically the way that you would select a normal or a regular non-cryptocurrency multi-currency account. You can either select a default based on where you are, or you can set one for the next transaction. So you can sit there in line and say, okay, for this one, I'm going to pay in euro. And then boom, you do it. I should also mention, speaking of euro, that this will only be available to EU citizens at the moment, but they do plan to expand at some point.
Oh, I wonder if this is now capable because of the what is the open banking rule in the EU?
PSD2.
PSD2 just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It's the sequel,
Tokyo
baby.
PS2.
Yeah. So maybe that's why, because within the EU, they're allowed to have those connections between your accounts more easily.
Yeah, I'm hoping that that's something that we import from the EU at some point. But it's still it's really nifty, and it's also I also like where Europe is going. I've always been not frustrated, but I've always been taken aback how Europe is. Other than Scandinavia, if you go to like Italy or Spain, it's not a lot of digital payments. But I saw in the news recently that both the European Commission and the European Central Bank are looking to launch a digital euro as well, a CBDC. And, you know, that and this kind of points to this new dawn of payments in Europe. So pretty amazing stuff for the next time I visit, say, I don't know, a year from now when we're all able to do so.
Steve, what's your understanding of like a digital euro? Is that, what's the difference between that and paying with my debit card, paying euro with my debit card? What's any thoughts on that?
John can tell you all about this one.
Oh, yes. Let me tell you. Yeah, well, the central bank digital currency in that case, it's blockchain based still, but it's permissioned from the government, probably with their main banking partners to issue essentially the same as their fiat currency, but it's purely running on the blockchain.
Right, and it's also pegged as well, so that you're paying potentially euro, not with some cryptocurrency. It's blockchain based, not cryptocurrency based.
Makes sense. So they're not printing the additional digital euros. Just it's only lives on the blockchain.
That's right.
Very cool. I'd heard some rumblings about a digital dollar being in the works. So it'll be interesting to see kind of the implications of digitizing central bank currencies here in the future.
The big one really is the digital yuan in China is one that's sort of taken off. I think they launched earlier than the EU will have launched. But yeah, it's something that's gaining more momentum as well.
Yeah, they're the furthest along. And I think the US just came out with just that we're researching and collaboration with MIT on that. So use cases, how it would work, that kind of thing. Not implementation or testing yet.
Indeed.
Excited to see how it goes with the yuan and seeing if that kind of lays the groundwork for potentially accelerating digitizing the US dollar.
Yeah, we'll see what mistakes they make and then we'll learn from that maybe. Yeah. That'd be helpful. Thanks. Well, speaking of China, we know that Ant Financial's IPO got nixed a little bit earlier. You know, they were estimated to be valued at $316 billion. Bloomberg is now reporting as of January 21st that their valuation may fall all the way down to, I want to hear your guess, all the way from $316 billion down to
oh, God, what? it has to be sub 200.
Let's call it 150.
Oh, yeah, you're closer, $108 billion. Now, that's their estimate, but in any case, they've lost probably at least half of their value just from, not just from the cancellation of the IPO, but the dark clouds now over Ant and Jack Ma and Alibaba, which is also being investigated for antitrust. That is not deferring to Xi Jinping enough. I'm going to take it that way.
Sorry, I do think that this is kind of an indictment of this of the Chinese style of having no rule of law, right? It's basically if your company is, as you say, if it's held in high regard only at the discretion of the great leader, that is not a good way to do business.
Well, Ant Financial is not the only one that got their deal scuttled. The Visa acquisition of Plaid was tanked this last week, and the Department of Justice was just putting more and more pressure on them that they decided just to cancel it. And that was going to be for $5.3 billion, which is huge considering Plaid hasn't been around that long and they're under 600 employees, which they're now positioned to, they're saying they're going to grow that. But, you know, a funny thing about this is, you know, when you go in to raise money, you're like, we're going to take over the world. I'm sure Plaid was there saying, we're going to own this market. Payments is going to be ours. We're going to be a $500 billion company. And then when the Department of Justice comes knocking on your door, then you're like, well, we're just a little guy. This is not a big deal. Who are we next to Visa? Come on. We're nobody. Don't even worry about this deal. So I imagine it was some level of that when they're presenting, but even that was not enough. And the Department of Justice just was putting too much requirements on this. Now Plaid is putting on a very brave face. They're holding back the tears and they're like any good startup, actually just plowing forward. They're doubling their staff in Europe. They're already operating in a few countries already. So they're not that small, even though they don't have that many employees. And they've had some very strong backers behind them. Mary Meeker, the famous internet investor who comes out with her deck every year on the future, led their last funding round in late 2018. And she's still involved in that. They're saying, hey, this is just a little detour. This is nothing. We're going to still grow. And now we're back to saying that we're going to dominate the payment space.
It's just a bump in the road. I'm wondering for either of you two, we've seen, of course, the massive pops of fintech companies and also the crazy valuations. Do you think this will affect that portion of the business?
Yeah, you have to think about like what will this will do to valuations if you're in a sensitive area or maybe you're ruling out some acquirers because they would attract antitrust attention, especially now with a more vigorous, with the new Biden administration that just came in, renewed regulatory enforcement and taking a little closer eye on these deals that might, since your liquidity, your exit plans are part of your value. I mean, if you knock out, you know, M&As or IPOs or any of these or SPACs, which will probably get a lot more regulation going forward also, then that's taking some of the chips off the table. You know, makes there's a little bit more of a liquidity discount every time you block one of the possible exits.
Any thoughts around if Plaid is still hoping for an acquisition from big fintech, or any thoughts or rumblings around that?
You know, this just happened, so I don't know if anybody's going to come around, especially knowing that the DOJ is going to be right on you as soon as you go in. So I don't expect that. And it looks like they're planning on growing aggressively so that sometime down the line, you know, they would be positioned to take over or IPO or whatever their other exit strategy would be.
It's also interesting because that's a pretty hefty price tag, right? The number of companies that can actually make an acquisition of that scale is somewhat limited. So I think that this kind of narrows the path to an acquisition and really makes it more attractive to go the IPO route, I assume.
Can you imagine if you're an employee and you already put a borrowed money and bought a house or a fancy car, and then they say, no, the deal after a year, almost a year to the day, actually, the deal goes south, and you're, oh, shit, I have to keep working for maybe a bigger payday in the future, but you know, I have to keep working hard for a while.
My Lamborghini that I just leased, what happened to that?
You know, that's not that unrealistic. I'm sure there's some of that, some version of that going on.
Some big breakups already, you know, these past few months. You got the Kim and Kanye breakup. We got the Visa Plaid breakup. I mean, I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head, though, John, on, you know, they're basically going to be charging forward. They have such market dominance that even if the fact that this didn't happen is a bump in the road. It's not going to be a big issue for them to expand. They're very plugged in the domestic space in the US, but it looks like they're really doubling down on their international growth too. So it'll be interesting to see how they grow these coming years.
Yeah. It's hard to predict these kinds of things too with this regulatory stuff. You know, Morgan Stanley bought E-Trade, no problem. Intuit bought Credit Karma for $8 billion, you know, no problem. And then Visa buys Plaid and antitrust lawsuit.
It's so interesting.
It's hard to tell.
The political components here are so...
You didn't pay off the right people.
It's so pertinent, right? And we don't talk about it as much because we don't really have data on it. But this is, when you look at some of the other price tags of big acquisitions these past few years, you can't help but to think that they just didn't maneuver some of the political components as well as some of the big acquisitions from the finance world.
Yeah, it's all part of the value that you bring, you know, the whole package. Can you get the deal done is part of it too. Well, speaking of the political component, we have a whole new regulatory political environment coming in. And now that's going to mean new SEC chairman, new Treasury secretary, new CFPB head, whatever they're called. What is the head of this? I think they're just called the head of the CFPB.
I think commissioner, right? Or head, yeah.
Commissioner sounds right.
Yeah.
And we have some people that are way more friendly to fintech and Bitcoin. I think you were noticing some of that, right, Sean?
Yeah, I was. Two really big things in the crypto corner for us this week. The number one biggest thing to be on your radar when it comes to crypto and Biden is that Biden has frozen some regulations that would make it more difficult for users to basically have crypto wallets that are self-hosted. So let me give you a bit of background. Basically, what had happened was there was a regulation that was proposed by former Treasury Secretary, our favorite Mnuchin. I can never spell his name right. It's really interesting, but it's a hard one. Yeah, we're saying bye bye to Steve. Not you, Steve. This is Steve Mnuchin, and he had imposed this controversial regulation that basically made it difficult for users to have self-hosted crypto wallets. So he proposed the regulation. If it would have passed, it would have required that banks submit reports, keep records, and verify the identity of customers who make transactions to and from private cryptocurrency wallets. So really just a really big, more transparency play, which one of the value adds of the crypto world is the privacy element. So if this regulation would have been passed, it would have really shocked a lot of folks in the space. And Jack Dorsey predicted that that would have caused a lot of crypto players to go offshore. So Biden has frozen this regulation. So that's big because it means that one big thing. It means that we're back to the privacy and the security elements that we value in the cryptocurrency space. That's not going to change because these FinCEN regulations are frozen. Big positive move for the crypto industry. The folks in the crypto world are bullish on Biden. So that's the biggest thing. The second thing that happened in Crypto Corner this week was the chair of the OCC, and the OCC is the Office of the Currency Comptroller, may be a former Ripple board member. Now, this is big because...
Ooh, that's huge, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This is sort of like the regulatory pipe dream of a lot of folks in the crypto space. Having someone who understands the space as the head of the Office of the Currency Comptroller, that is really going to be a positive for us in the space because it's someone who understands us, someone who understands people in this world and understands the fears, understands the hopes and the dreams of people in this space. And so this, if he's confirmed by the U.S. Senate, this individual Barr, Michael Barr, who's, just to be clear, one of several people being considered, but he's very high on the list. He would be someone who would be playing in the DC space and advocating for fair access and fair regulation in the crypto world. At least that's what we think now. So let's see what happens. I think it'll be exciting to see what the confirmations look like.
Fair is kind of subjective though, isn't it? You know, unregulated, let us do what we want. That sounds fair.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all in the eyes of the beholder. I think the question I think is going to be, is Biden going to choose folks who understand the space? Because I think the biggest thing is understanding. If you have folks that understand the space, then the likelihood of, in my opinion, the likelihood of them proposing and enacting regulations, crypto regulations that allow for the stable growth of the space, I think is going to be a lot easier versus someone who doesn't understand the space and would potentially try to relinquish or to try to bring on draconian regulations. Barr seems to understand the space. So because of his association as a board member of Ripple. And the general consensus in the crypto space from my read is that it's better to have someone who understands the space versus someone who doesn't.
A revolution that would be.
And it is because a lot of folks don't understand the space. And a lot of folks in the regulatory environment really have come in with the cold with a cold vision. Brian Brooks, our former current OCC head, was one of the first big names who really understood the space. He came from Coinbase as a chief legal officer, and he moved into the position as head of the OCC in DC. And he's out now because he was under the Trump administration, and now on to Biden and potentially Michael Barr.
Yeah, and the other one that's coming in that has a lot of fintech and actually crypto background is Gary Gensler for the SEC. So we have
two
big ones that are OCC and SEC. That's basically your, all the big bank regulations.
Mm-hmm. That's everything, yeah. I think all the C's, yeah. It's funny because Gensler actually teaches a course at the MIT Business School on fintech and on blockchain. So he knows his stuff enough to teach about it to MIT students. So that's one that I'm really keen on.
Yeah. He's at MIT. He's doing something called FinTech at CSale, which brings companies and faculty together to improve FinTech. He's testified in Congress on cryptocurrencies when he was part of the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, a consultant on regulations for cryptocurrencies and ICOs, initial coin offerings. So he has some decent background in this, which, again, would be kind of unusual for someone at that high level of the SEC. Normally there's a more traditional banking route. And because large banks haven't traded or dealt with cryptocurrencies, and they've been prohibited for the most part, they just don't have this kind of background. And we see kind of a similar, at least friendliness with financial inclusion and openness to alternative data for lending from Janet Yellen. She's not, as steeped in, because like I said, she's coming from more of the traditional side, but she's mentioned openness to these kinds of tools in terms of financial inclusion. So it looks like we have a pretty good lineup for maybe in a few years, some regulations getting laid out that will make it easier for the large banks and then for the fintechs to expand their businesses into enterprise as well.
So the regulatory outlook looks pretty positive if you're any sort of a fintech innovator.
Hopefully it goes well. I mean, this is such an exciting time because, like you said, John, earlier, with prior administrations, that the team is stacked with former big bank folks. And this is sort of like, seems like a unique roster for the Biden administration, which certainly paints a picture of hope for people in the fintech space.
You know, that's not helping the Bitcoin price lately. Do you know what it is now?
It's roughly $30,070.82. So,
87 cents, man, that's it. You're out.
No, 82. No, you check the most up-to-date prices. Are you, John? Come on.
I'm using.
I got the live feed.
I have a live feed. World Coin Index, Coinbase, Bitstamps, and the average of those three show that you're a little bit.
Oh,
off
you did there. A quick average. Nice.
Yeah. No, I have it built in into a feed.
My personal take on this is that an asset like Bitcoin is going to be volatile. You have to expect these 10% to 20% swings. We're still in sort of the nascent stages of this space, and it will likely experience a lot more, in my personal opinion, a lot more volatility before it levels out. So we're in for a wild ride. At the end of last year, as you all know, we had a big end of year run up, and there may be a little correction here, but certainly more volatility looks like coming up. But that's kind of, you go in to this space knowing that it's going to be a volatile ride. It's not going to be boring like bonds, you know?
Yeah. What? This moves way more than my treasuries. What's going on here? Open your, yeah. So yeah, it's a different market for sure. And now it's time for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the crazy interesting story behind it, especially the way Steve tells it. What's your number, Steve?
Boy, do I have a crazy number. My number is 9. And that is the number of months that, we discussed plans. We discussed Plaid earlier, and Plaid has launched an incubator for fintech founded by BIPOC. That is Black, Indigenous, or People of Color founders. And it is a 9-month program. And it's interesting because we haven't seen, we've seen, of course, incubators and other, accelerators type of programs aimed at people of color, but this is one that's focused exclusively on fintech. So if you happen to be a BIPOC and have an early stage fintech, go check out Plaid's FinRise Incubator.
Wait. Can you tell me what BIPOC, what does that stand for again?
Black, Indigenous, or People of Color.
Okay. Yeah, I missed that last part.
Yeah, indeed. What's your number, John?
My number is $3 billion. That's the valuation of Brex, which I've been shocked. I mean, if you'd asked me a year ago and knowing that there's a pandemic on the way, that Brex, who focuses on venture-backed tech and life sciences startups, if their valuation would shoot up, I'd say, no way, they're going to tank. The economy is going to do terrible. But here they are at a $3 billion valuation. And so far, they've raised $732 billion. Not bad for two teenagers from Brazil.
That is pretty incredible.
Wow. Yeah. That is amazing. They've really skyrocketed. And they're talk about growth. They started at Y Combinator, right? Years ago.
But this kind of gives truth to what Jamie Dimon said. I think it was late last week, was that JP Morgan should be scared shitless of fintechs. I mean, these are companies that are getting $500 million to take away your most valuable customers. Nice. And this is just one company. So yeah, I think they should be scared. You have other companies taking like a commercial clients, which are, you know, profitable, like a Divi. They've raised $400 billion in the small business lending, Bluevine, Fundbox. These are all $500 million of funding going into taking away big bank and small and all of your business, basically, from the large banks. So yes, Jamie Dimon, I think you're right. You and the other large incumbent banks should be scared shitless if you're not investing and improving and keeping your products on the cutting edge. What's your final bite, Sean?
$240 million. Crazy story. This guy, Stefan Thomas, he's based in SF, computer programmer. And about 10 years ago, he was given 7,000 Bitcoins as part of just a payment for explaining how crypto works. And at the time, they were worth between $2 and $6. And now, as you know, that number has changed. And it kind of goes to some of the bigger questions in the space in terms of access. There's that double-edged sword with privacy and access. So it's the you know, these wallets are so secure. They're so private, which is a value component of them. But at the same time, their privacy and their security can be a downside here, as we could see. This gentleman has really, you know, two chances left to guess what his password is. If not, it's permanently lost, is what I'm hearing. So should be interesting to see how it plays out.
That's a big bummer. This also, it reminds me of a story that I read on the BBC maybe a week ago or so, where there's a guy in the UK who, like the person that you mentioned, also had, in his case, he didn't have the password, but he actually threw away his hard drive, which contained his password, and put it, and eventually it ended up in a landfill in his small town in England. And he's petitioned the city council or whatever the local government there is to allow him to go basically dig for his hard drive in the landfill. And they've said no multiple times. And he said, if you allow me to do it, I will actually donate 10% of what's in there. But they said, no, sorry, it'll just be too much of a pain in the neck. You're out of luck. Keep your Bitcoin password safe, people.
yeah, absolutely. Keep those wallet passwords secure. There's a lot of interesting new hardware that has come out that is wallet hardware. And even with some of this new hardware, you're responsible for the password. You have to keep it in a safe place. No one else can help you recover it. Steve, what you just said reminded me of that episode of Silicon Valley, where the guy from the Tres Comas Club, he basically has to dig through a landfill to find his encrypted hard drive. So keep those passwords safe.
Life imitates art, my friend.
You can't make this stuff up. They have to steal it from real life, from the newspaper. All right. Thanks for listening. And please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you, Sean and Steve, for joining.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
See you next week.